the Gemara more, because I see that.
Okay, you're on.
Easier than Shmita. I would just like to say, anyone who has a problem with the test should volunteer himself to write the test himself. I think that's the best idea. Anyone who has a problem with the test, he should volunteer himself to write the test himself.
That would be greatly appreciated and accepted.
Also, for review, it's on podcasting, so you can hear it over and over and over again.
And you can learn all your Americanisms that you need to learn on the podcast. You should do a podcast for the test. Good morning, Nick.
I think they hit the lead on that.
Okay, so we have, with Hashem's help, reach a new Mishnah. A new Mishnah, Kaf Zayin Amud Bet, 27b. Halfway down the page, we have a new Mishnah. Baruch Hashem. We are still learning the topic of who is qualified to be a witness.
Or a judge.
Or a judge. We are going to see in this Mishnah that there are some differences between being a witness and a judge. It's not a straightforward, what's the word, comparison. All people who can't be witnesses are automatically people who can't be judges, and all people who can't be judges. Generally speaking, 80% of the time, 90% of the time, it's the same rule. If you're a relative, you can't be a witness or a judge. If you're a robber, you can't be a witness or a judge. But there are some tweaks in that where there is a difference. Generally speaking, the rule applies to both. So when we talk about one, usually we're talking about the other two. But not always. Which is why we need to learn the rule, lav davka. The Gemara says, it's always the case, except when it's not. It's always the case, except for the exceptions. Always has to be exceptions to every rule. Hashem created creation in such a way. Anyway, Tov, let's learn our Mishnah like this. Elu hen hakrovim. These are the krovim. These are the relatives. We said up until now, without knowing why, but we said that you're not allowed to be a relative. They haven't yet got there. Now we're getting there. This is the rule that says you're not allowed to be a relative. And now we're going to get the list. So I'm going to read through them. I don't know if there's any particular point in going into each
we
one.
We should bring up that when it says brother, it also means sister.
Yes and no. Women are forbidden anyway from being witnesses or judges. So this list, that's for me, that's very
sacrifice.
Thank you very much.
Also, an uncle.
To keep me quiet.
Also, the reciprocal of the uncle and a nephew.
Yeah, we'll get that. One at a time. We haven't started yet. Cool. So, these are the relatives who are disqualified. So, this is a list of men, right? You're going to see that the women aren't in this list. Mothers, sisters, daughters are not in the list. But they're disqualified anyway because they're women. They would be disqualified too because they're relatives. But we don't need to list them because they have a separate disqualification. Because they're a woman doesn't mean they're any worse. It means they're different. It's not their job to be witnesses. Hashem didn't create them for that. They've got other things to do. Right? They don't need to be on the stand being harangued by lawyers. Tov, Elu hen hakrovim. These are the krovim that are not allowed to be witnesses. Right? Achiv. Here it says Achiv. Here it says Achiv.
That's revealing.
In my Nekudot of the article, it says Achiv.
Let's just say for a second.
V'achi Aviv.
Achiv.
Achi Aviv.
Okay.
So one's brother and one's father's brother.
Okay, also.
Yeah. I'm just reading what article says. What article doesn't have to be unchallengeable.
The others are also
okay. So, Achiv, your brother, right? So what we're talking about here, we're talking about people who can't testify together. Or can't, not to, we're going to get to testify together. People who can't testify against one of the litigants, right? So if one of the litigants, there's a litigant, so who can't be witnesses? These are the relatives of the litigants that can't be witnesses or judges, right? So Achiv, his brother. Bachi Aviv, the brother of his father, right? His uncle, we would say. Achi Imo, the brother of his mother, also an uncle, but on the other side. Ubaal Achoto, the husband of his sister. His brother-in-law, we would call him. Baal Achot Aviv, or the husband of the sister of his father, meaning his uncle by marriage.
His
uncle. But not his lin. I don't know the words for this in the vocabulary, but I would call it an uncle by marriage, right? Ubaal achotimo, and also on the other side, the husband of the sister of his mother, his mother's sister's husband, right? So even though they are not technically related by marriage, they're related by marriage. And that's a close enough relationship by marriage to also disqualify him from being in the witness stand or being a judge in that case. Okay. Next, Baal Imo, the husband of his mother, right? Who's the husband of his mother? It means someone who's not his father. You could say we've got his father. His father is clearly, but the husband of his mother too, if she married again, right? His stepfather, we call it.
Right.
So even though his stepfather is not related to him, for this purpose, he's considered to be a relative. Okay? So Baal Imo, v'chamav, what's it? Father-in-law. Chamav is a father, chamiv, father-in-law. Right, that's his wife's husband. His wife's father. Who's his wife's husband? That would be difficult. It depends. Can only have one husband. The Gisa. Gisa is your brother-in-law. A Gis is a brother-in-law. Top. Hey.
Brother-in-law is his sister's husband.
Sister's husband. Didn't we have that? We had that already. Balachoto. Hold on, let's just see. Here it means his wife's sister's husband.
That's what I
we've
said.
Already had Baal Achoto, the sister's husband, his brother-in-law. So this is a different brother-in-law. This is, says the footnote, his wife's sister's husband. Even that part, his wife's sister, her husband, is considered to be a relative for these purposes and is disqualified. It's quite removed. Okay, Gemara says, hen, them, uvnehem, and their sons, bachat nehem, and their sons-in-law. So all of the people we listed, plus their sons and their sons-in-law. That's my understanding. Yes. So all those lists, plus their sons and their sons-in-law. So there's quite a big family tree. Yes, they are, yes. They will be, because you're going to look at the reverse. We've listed them down the tree, but the reverse also takes place. So the sons and the sons-in-law, you switch it round. If one can't be a witness for him, he obviously can't be a witness for him. So you can turn the tree upside down on its head and say, yes, he also got. So then instead of looking down the tree, you're looking up the tree. In terms of grandfather and father and grandfather.
But it's only one generation. Up and down.
Yes.
So that if you had a cousin that was related to the cousin related to the grandfather, then they could testify.
Could be. My ability to visualize what you're saying is not so strong, so could be.
The grandfather had a brother.
Yes. Right. So now we're on. Yes. I think so. I think so. That's the best I can say. I don't know. I'm not. Family trees is not my strong point. I kind of blur when it gets past your aunt, uncle. That's like as far as my mind can kind of stretch to the. We could draw it up on the board if it's really important. Okay. What else? That's not anything. The Horgo is apparently a stepson. Horgo. Horeg? From the word Horeg is a stepson. Yeah? Horiga. Horeg. Yeah. Okay. Hogo Ben Ishtar. Yeah, Hogo Rashi says Ben Ishtar. His stepson. The son of his wife, meaning not his son. Okay, also him, Levado. Him alone, meaning what's it mean him alone? He doesn't get the rule of the son and the stepson. We said all that list, plus their sons and their stepsons. And then we added now, plus his stepson. But not to add on the stepsons, the sons and stepsons of that stepson. Yeah? Make sense? Okay. Amar Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi says, Zu Mishnah to Rabbi Akiva. This Mishnah follows Rabbi Akiva. Right? Rabbi Akiva taught this Mishnah. Aval Mishnah Rishonah, but in an earlier Mishnah, we'll come back to what that means in earlier Mishnah, but in an earlier Mishnah, in a different Mishnah, let's just say for the moment, Dodo Uben Dodo, his uncle and the son of his uncle, so Chol HaRa'ui LeYorshav, and all people who are fitting to inherit him. What does it mean? It means that the earlier Mishnah described the disqualifications differently. We've listed out all these disqualifications, his uncle's wife, his uncle, his son, his blah 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 blah. And it says, Rabbi Yossi says, this is what, according to Rabbi Akiva, there was a different Mishnah that described it differently. The other Mishnah said, you only need to know the following rule. The uncle and the son of the uncle, and then anyone else who can inherit him. The Torah has separate laws on who can inherit you. Your brothers, your uncles, right? So anyone that's in line for inheritance, they're considered to be a relative. And they're disqualified. That's the same rule. Plus, you need to add on to that list the uncle and the son of the uncle, who for whatever reason they're not included otherwise in that list. No, we did as well. But it's just that the other Mishnah described it differently. Is that Rabbi Yossi is pointing out that we had a previous Mishnah that had a different way of describing who these relatives were that were disqualified. It may be that there's a 90% overlap between the two. Maybe not. There's a footnote here which probably tells me there's a difference between them. Right, there is a difference between some who are included in one list and some who are not included in the other. Probably, but you have to do the all the workings out. There's a long footnote here in footnote 19 if you're interested in seeing that. It's a big big Rashi.
It says mostly the inheritance passes through the father's side and not the mother's,
and it's not reciprocal. So, top. I would say anyone who's interested should look more deeply into it. It's a big, complicated subject. Who exactly is covered? Who exactly is not covered? If you ever get to that place where you're sitting on a Beit Din and you need to check, so you know where it is to find the rules that are in here.
And this is completely different than modern Israeli law.
Probably.
Because with modern Israeli law, anything can inherit.
So, even your cat. Very nice.
Oh, that's exactly what the attorney said.
There we go. When you asked him, he said it was okay.
No, he volunteered.
And Kichi went and asked him, probably. Anyway, okay. So, What else? Next part of the Mishnah. V'kol ha-karov lo ba'oto sha'a. And anyone who was a relative at that time. What does that mean? Haya karov v'nitrachek. Hareza kasher. Meaning that if he was a relative, but then he was nitrachek, he was distant, he was no longer a relative. How do you become a relative? How do you disrelative yourself? Many people want to know that, right? They would like to do that. But no, we're talking here about where those relationships are by marriage. Where there are relationships by marriage, and for whatever reason, that marriage no longer takes place. So it's possible that you're now no longer a relative. Like we said, the brother, the husband of your sister. So he's disqualified, but if they got divorced, then he's not. And if the sister died, so it depends. So here it says there's a rule. Right, we're going to see, the Mishnah is going to say, let's just see Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, afilu meita bito, even if his daughter died, v'yesh lo banim mimena, and he has sons from her, harei zekarov, right? He's still a relative, meaning his son-in-law. The son-in-law stays a relative if there are children. So even though she died, that ties him back into the family. If there was no children, he'd be off, so to speak. He's broken the bond. He's no longer a relative. But if there were children, according to Rabbi Yehuda, right? That's not necessarily the Tanakhama doesn't hold that. Right, because Rabbi Yehuda has to bring that in separately. So Rabbi Yehuda has a different view. But Tanakhama obviously doesn't hold that. Rabbi Yehuda does.
Children still relatives of their parents die?
Yes. Yes, because they were always relatives. It's only the ones who, like the husband, who was never a relative. So he was only a relative through his link. Right, when that link's broken. But he's, according to Rabbi Yehuda, he stays. He stays in that position so long as there are children in the marriage. Okay. Ha'ohev v'hasoneh. Additional categories. Ha'ohev v'hasoneh. Ha'ohev, the one who loves you, your good friend. Ha'ohev. Someone who's a good friend. V'hasoneh, someone who hates you. Right, according to Rabbi Yehuda, this is a continuation of Rabbi Yehuda, says my thoughts, you know, they're also disqualified. If you've got a really good friend, apparently he's disqualified from testifying for you, because he's going to be biased. He can't. If you're your best friend, your chevruta, right, he can't be a judge in a case where, according to Rabbi Yehuda, where you're one of the litigants. That's my chevruta on the stand. It's going to go well today. Right, it's not... not going to work, right? Says Rabbi Yehuda. Anasoneh, someone who hates you. Again, it's not fair. Can't have someone judging you or witnessing against you if they clearly hate you. We're going to see what it means that they hate you. How do you know? We got proofs here.
What is
it? What's a friend? So the Gemara is going to say what it is. Ohev, zeh shushvinu. The ohev, this means he's shushvinu. What's his shushvinu? Yeah, fair. Well, we call it now the best man.
Right.
The best man. The best man, he comes from here, something called the Shushvino. Right? Why do you have a best man in a wedding? It's not logical. You have a wedding, you have a wedding. Whoever invented the concept of having a best man? Right? The answer is the Torah. It's in the Gemara. Right? The person who's the best man, what's his job? So nowadays, the job of the best man is to stand up and make a speech which makes fun of the groom and embarrasses him in front of his new wife and all the people there. Right? That's his job. Right? But now, in the old days... Huh? Yeah, in the old days, he didn't do that, for Hashem, because that's Issur Min HaTorah, to embarrass someone in public. And I've heard some terrible best man speeches. It really...
That must be very English.
Yeah. English people like to rip them apart. Mamash, it's like a...
The worst man, the ex-boyfriend.
Had a friend of mine, his best man, ripped into him the heart. He said, I'll tell you one of the jokes. It was not funny, but it was very funny, but it was very terrible. He said, when he was born, right, sent for a man, when he was born, and he came out and showed him to his mother cried. Etc., etc. And that was one of the better ones. So, anyway, but what did the best man do in the old days? Shushvinu, he basically paid for the wedding. He brought the food, right? He brought the food. He was the guy who put on all the food and stuff for the wedding. Basically sorted out. That's what you did if you were a best man. Nowadays, you go and get a penny out your best man. You're lucky you can get a decent gift.
I thought he was supposed to be your shomer.
Shomer's different. You don't need a shomer. For when? For after? For
before. In the day of the wedding.
To what?
So you don't see the bride that day.
So, okay. I didn't see the bride that day either, but I didn't have a shomer. I don't know. No. Okay. Anyway, Yofi. So that's what it means to be a friend. So your best man can't be a witness or judge for you. What's a sone? Sone koshalodi beimo shlosha yamin be'eva. A person who hates you, right? You see what it means. Is anyone who doesn't speak to you out of eva, hatred, enmity, for 3 days. The answer to someone for 3 days, it's not a problem. Someone who deliberately doesn't speak to you because they don't like you for 3 days. 3 days. Right? That's called an enemy. Don't do that. Right? You're not allowed to bear a grudge in your heart. It's not allowed to... Amrullah, they say to him, Lo nechshedu Yisrael alkach. They said to him, they said to Rabbi Yehuda, when he said this, Lo nechshedu Yisrael alkach. Am Yisrael are not suspected of this. What does it mean? Rashi says, Lo nechshedu Yisrael alkach, about 5 or 6 lines up from the bottom of the page of Rashi. La'id sheker. They're not suspected to testify falsely, Mishum Eva, on account of hatred, enmity, v'ahava or love. V'davka be'edut plige, aval bedin modu. Davka, we're talking about edut, witnessing. But bedin modu. But in the case of judging, we agree with Rabbi Yehuda. You're right. Your best man and someone who hates you can't be a judge. You're right. But for as a witness, we don't expect they're going to lie on the stand just because they don't like you or just because they were your best man. You're not going to lie for that, but to be a judge, you're right, it's not appropriate. So he says... Le Rabbanan, the pasul lo ladun, he's disqualified from judging. Why? The kevan de sane le, because since he hates him, lo matzi lahafuche bezuchute, he's not going to find reasons for his innocence. A judge has an obligation to try and find reasons. We're talking in a capital case, to try and find reasons for innocence. He's obligated to try and get him off. Right, he needs to find the reasons. And if he hates him, so he's going to find it hard to fulfill that commandment. So that's why we don't make him a judge. Mm-hmm. But it suggests that maybe a person who loves him can be a judge, because he only brings here the side of the person who hates him. Tov. Let's look in the poskim, see what that is. Tov, end of the Mishnah. Yeah. That was in the law of killing Bishkaka. It's not a shogeg if you hated him. wasn't a you didn't kill him by shot. You can't kill him by accident if you didn't, right?
Prepared.
I mean, you can in theory, but the rule is we don't accept shogeg, because mostly it's not going to be the case. Okay, into the Gemara. So the Gemara wants to know the question of all questions that we always ask. Mahane Mile, where do we know this from? You're right, it's a very nice list of relatives that can't be disqualified, but they have to have a Torah source. What's the source for this rule? Answer, the Tanu Rabbanan. It was taught in a Braita. A Pasuk. What's the Pasuk? From Devarim. Lo yumtu avot albanim. There's a Pasuk in the Torah that says that the fathers are not put to death on account of the sons. Right? So what does that mean? So normally we don't read that as if it's talking about who can be disqualified in a court case. But the Gemara learns out from that. Ma Talmud Lamar. What's the Torah teaching us by this verse? If you want to say that it comes to teach, Shalom Yom Tu Avot, that the fathers will not die, but Avon Banim, on account of the sins of the sons, Ubanim but Avon Avot. And likewise the other way around, and sons will not die on account of the sins of the fathers. Right? If you want to say that's what the meaning of the verse is, and therefore it doesn't mean disqualifications, right? We're going to see how the disqualification works in a minute, but it doesn't mean disqualifications. It's got another meaning. If you want to say that's the meaning, that you won't die on account of the sins, Hareka Ba'anema, it's already said in a different place. Ish Becheto Yumatu. A person, a man, dies because of his sin, meaning his own sin. So we already have that separately, that a person dies because of his own sin. So I don't need a separate verse in the Torah to tell me, and the son doesn't die on because of the sin of the father. It's obvious, you just told me. Right. Yeah, fair. So we're going to see why that's the case. It's in here. Hold that. We'll come to that. It's going to say.
So are you saying that if you're a Rasha and you teach your son to be a Rasha, and you're
we haven't got teaching sons yet. We're just talking about the basic rules.
Because they're carrying on the tradition of being a Rasha.
We're just talking about the basic rules. So far, we've got a basic rule. The basic rule here says that the sons. That each person dies for his own sin. And because we've got a verse that says each person dies for his own sin, we've got another verse which says the fathers don't die on account of the sons, the sons don't die on account of the fathers. It can't be the same thing, because we've already got the rule. So therefore, that's now free for me to make a learning from it. What do I learn from that? Ella, lo yamutu avot albanim. Therefore, what does the passage mean that the sons will not die, the fathers will not die for the sons? Be'edut banim. It means from the testimony of their sons. Right? Fathers cannot die through the testimony of their sons. They can't die because of their sons. Meaning, the son can't stand in the witness box and say, I saw my father kill someone. You can't kill a son, a father, and likewise the other way around. Ubanim lo yamotu alavot. And the sons won't die on account of their fathers. What does that mean? Be'edut avot, from the testimony of their fathers. Right, so we now have our source in the Torah for the fact that sons can't testify against fathers and fathers can't testify against sons. We need to expand that, but so far we've got the basic rule. The Gemara at this point digresses a little bit to just talk about what we just mentioned. Ubanim ba'avon avot lo. But wait a minute. Sons don't die on account of the sins of their fathers. Is that true? Why not? Vahakativ, because we've seen elsewhere, also in the Torah, in Shemot, Poked avon avot albanim, the sins of the fathers are visited on the sons. Right, we have another passage which tells us Dafka the opposite. That the sins of the fathers are put onto the sons. Sorry guys. We're still carrying the can. Right? Torah says so. How do we understand that if we just had another verse in the Torah which says you only die for your own sin, you don't get anybody else. So wait a minute. Well, we've got two different things. Well, here from the father, it's about how do we currently we've got a stirrup, we've got two conflicting passages. How do we resolve it? Hatam over there, right? In the second case where sons are punished with the sins of their fathers, how does that apply? Kesha ochazan ma'aser avotehem biyadehem, when they hold the practices of their fathers in their hands, meaning they carry them on, right? We know basically that, call it sociologically, to use terms of Avodah Zorah, right? Sociologically, sons follow the path of their fathers. That's what he was taught. You learn from your father. The father beats up his wife, so you beat up your wife too. That's what you learn at home. That's how you practice. Right? If your father beat you up, right? That's what you do with kids. Right? So they automatically pass on. So the question is, if you carry on that same sins, so you also get his.
That's what I was saying.
Right. Yeah, I know. I was just stopping you because we haven't got that yet. Right? So, but 100%. Okay.
So he gets it from his grandfather. He gives it to his children.
So your feet, we have to be careful between Minhagim and Aveirot.
I mean,
to bring Minhagim down from your father's might, right? On Pesach, we always take a vase of flowers and wave it over someone's head. That's a Moroccan custom, right? So people, that you can pass that down.
No, it's never.
But if you're right, but if you're breaking the halakha, looking at three stars is not a good thing to do necessarily, because you might get it wrong. Might be that but you can look at, like the Gemara says, when three medium stars, but you have to know what three medium stars look like. Alright, so this is not necessarily an Aveira, but it could lead you to making a mistake.
But on the negative side, statistically speaking, since I've gone through the stats, if your parents had intermarried, there's a good chance that you will intermarry, and even better chance that your children will intermarry.
Right, and because the sins come down. Why? Because we have a job to fix. If it wasn't fixed in the previous generation, it's now on our shoulders. Unfortunately, that's what happens, right? If for those of you who are BT, we're fixing a lot, right? If it wasn't in your parents, it's now on your shoulders to fix. That's what happens, and you fix it, you get the reward. Also, you fix them; they're very happy, right? Because in Shemayim, right? You top, but. And if not, so unfortunately you carry the can as well.
And as you were saying, the analogy of beating your children is, if your parents were alcoholic, there's a good chance that you would be an alcoholic.
Right, but divorce is not a sin, right? There's no sin in being divorced. It's not ideal, right? But you didn't commit any aveira. The Gemara, the Torah allows you for a get. Right, so if that's not a problem, to right, if your father liked his chicken soup with noodles, and that's also not a problem. Right? It's not a problem to follow ways of your father's that aren't sins. Just the sinning bit, right? Drinking alcohol is not a good idea, but it's not a sin.
But if you become an alcoholic,
that's also not a sin. It depends what you do. It's a bit dumb, and you're going to mess up your life. But it's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about sins that are past that. Not an idea it can lead to. Obviously, I'm not recommending it, right? But anyway, Tom. So. Okay, so that's the difference, right? So when the Torah says that you die for your own, a person dies for his own sin. And it says that a person also takes on the sins of his father, that only if they carry them on. Okay. Kidatanya, like it was taught in a Braita, Va'af ba'avonot avotam tam yimaku, and even for this also, even, and in the sins of their fathers, with them they shall Yimakus, here says wither away. Yimaku, they will wither away. But I mean, the Brisa says Kisha Ochazin Maaseh Avotehim B'Yedehim. The Brisa says just what we learned out, that this is where they carry on their father's practices. So we have a Brisa that confirms that explanation. Now, we could argue against that, what we just learned. And the Gemara sees it if we can argue against that. Atah Omer, you say, because you're Ochazin, you say where they hold on to the practices, right? You want to argue that this meaning of the Torah is only when they hold on to the practices. Or maybe you can say, maybe you say where it's not. Why do you have to say that way? The Gemara is saying, you're right, it's a nice drasha. You could say this is where they hold on to the sins. But the plain meaning of the Torah doesn't mean that you have to say that way. Plain meaning of the Torah says that the sins are visited on the sons. Okay, you want to say this is where they didn't. But maybe you could say no, it doesn't have to be that way. The Gemara is going to go through the option. I hear your explanation. It's a nice explanation. That's what the Torah meant. But how do I know that? Maybe you could say the other way and say it's not where they were carrying on the practices. It doesn't say in the Torah in brackets where they carry on the practices. It just says the sins will be visited on the sons. So although there's a possibility, you can say. Also possibly not. So it looks at the other side of it. Or Einar Elakushe, maybe one is saying that it's not where they carry on their practices. So we have an answer. Kishehu Omer Ish Bechetor Yumatu. When the Torah says a man is put to death on account of his own sin, Harei Kishe Ochazin Maaseh Avotehem Bideihem. This is talking about those. We know that this is talking about those who carry on the sins of their fathers. So what's he saying? He's saying, you're right. When the Torah says, the Pasuk, that the sins of the fathers are visited on children. Now with that, you could take it either way. You could take it to mean only if they carry on. You could take it to mean not. It doesn't have to mean only if they carry on. But once I see that the Torah also has in another place that you only die for your own sin, now that teaches me about the first meaning. The first meaning has to be that you only die for your own sin. Meaning if you didn't carry on, you only die for your own sin. That Torah law, that you only die for your own sin, also has to apply. How can that apply in the first case? Because you get the sins if you carry them on. Meaning it's your sin now. You only die for your own sin, meaning your sin that you carried on. So did that make sense? Yeah?
You don't get punished for the sin that you didn't carry on?
Yeah, yeah. Yours? Yeah, yeah, they aren't yours.
They aren't yours.
They're not yours. If my father decides that he wants to be a murderer, and he teaches me to be a murderer, you know what, it's really good, or to steal or whatever, and I don't carry it on, I don't do that, so I don't get his sin. No. But if I carry on in his ways, I follow my father's footsteps into the bank job business, then I'm also going to get his sin. Apparently. Whatever that means. Double dose. It's double or quit. Get a chance to fix it or a chance to double it.
Huh?
You get extra dips in the Nachal Dinor, the rhythm of fire. Tov, okay. V'lo. But wait a minute, the Gemara is still not finished with this. The law, and is this correct? Is it not so that you can? What's not so? It's written like this. For Haggativ, we have a passage that's written in Vayikra that says what? v'chashlu ish ba'achid. And a man will stumble over his brother. What does that mean? It means ish ba'avon achid. It means because of the sins of his brother. Malamed shekulan ha'ravin zeh lazeh, which teaches us that we are actually responsible one for another. There is a level of being liable for the sins of someone else. I'm not completely in a hermetic bubble that only my sins affect me and nothing else. They don't affect it. We are actually Kol Yisrael ha'ravin zeh lazeh, right? We are all guarantees, and the sins of do affect us. We are punished, so to speak, right? And we suffer. That's a better word. We suffer on account of the fact that other people are messing up. So that's the next line. So the Gemara says, what are we talking about? So the Gemara says, Hatam sha'aya biyadam limchot v'lo yimichot. This is only in the case, you only suffer for someone else's sin, in the case of where it was in your hands to protest, and you didn't. When you could have protested and you didn't. Right? It's the famous, one of the famous answers about the Holocaust. How the righteous could also die. One of the answers, not the only answer, one of the answers given over there is that they had the opportunity to protest and they didn't. Therefore, they had the opportunity to protest and they didn't. No, the righteous Jews who also died at the same time.
Same thing with the Nazi German people. Who didn't protest, they just...
Yeah, but they just talk. They'll get their punishment in Shemayim. Right.
Yeah, the officers who said that.
What does that mean, protest? I mean, are you protesting against the sins of the Jews that are... Yeah. Or are you protesting?
Yes. We're talking about Jews. We're talking about Jews being suffering for the sins of other Jews. Why would I suffer that? Because I didn't do anything, and he's the one doing something. Answer: because I didn't protest. As to I haven't got the laws here of what protesting means, but it could well be that protesting is a case where there's a possibility of doing something. Right? If you see a guy driving past on Shabbos, right, and he's got the radio blaring and his sunnies on, and if you shout out, "Oi, it's Shabbos," you're not going to do anything. It's not going to help. In fact, it's probably going to make it worse, right? But you don't have to worry. But wait a minute, I've just learned that I'm going to get his sin if I don't protest. So I don't think it means that. It doesn't mean, right? Protesting where you can have an influence, where it can potentially make a difference. But it's clearly not going to make a difference, and it's probably just going to make things worse. You're just going to make him hate religious people far more, because who's this idiot shouting at me? So, right? So that's not the idea.
To make
So here,
Tom, you try the best. You did something.
Right. Although here we're talking about a specific case of receiving their sins. And the idea is to protest, meaning that you basically don't accept it. What's the case? When you protest, you're not accepting it. You're protesting that the concept of protesting is saying, no, I don't want it. I don't accept this. I'm not happy with it. So right? And therefore, you don't get the sin. It's interesting you could say that Rav Arush talks about the fact that Shmirat Inayim, that we've got a duty of Shmirat Inayim, but it's, as we know, it's very, very difficult. Right? But what's our job? Our job is to pray. Just half an hour every day, and a person who prays half an hour every day on Shmirat Hanayim, he's not punished for Shmirat Hanayim. Why not? He's effectively protesting. He's saying to Hashem, I don't want this. I don't want to be doing this. But it's happening anyway. So I'm not getting tainted with that sin because I'm protesting against it. Hashem, it's in your hands. You're going to make me fail, right? Your Yetzer Sahara is too big for me. Fine, but I can protest against it. Right? When we get up to Shemayim and they say, why did you do all those sins? And you say, will you get me a Yetzer Hara? And the Gemara says the Yetzer Hara is stronger than the person, and without Hashem's help, you can't defeat your Yetzer Hara. So it's not my fault, the Yetzer Hara. So Hashem will say, yes, you're right 100%, but you didn't protest.
So
our job is to protest.
I was thinking about the rabbi who was living in South Germany, and he moved to Poland before the Holocaust. in this city where he was a rabbi, nobody keeps Shabbat. Come only twice in the end,
So that was only one of the explanations. There were many other explanations, and each individual person had his own Heshbon in Shemayim as to what he was doing. There were people who escaped. Right? And why did this person say that person? Each person has his own Cheshbon Ish HaMayim, why this one? Or why not? Yeah.